Hi, I am Tim Hernandez. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. And today's special guest is poet Steve Wilson, who is also a professor at Texas State there in San Marcos, Texas. We're going to be speaking with him about his wonderful new book titled Lose to Find. It's out with Finishing Line Press. And of the book, I want to share wonderful author John Blair. He wrote of Steve's book this wonderful blurb where he says, "The poems of Lose to Find are above all a call to clarity, to pure imagistic witness in forms both familiar and experimental, from the brilliant evocation of how nightjars dive into an echo to the lonely and lovely call and response of found texts. You read these poems and you come out the other side chastened and charmed by a sense both of longing and a profound gratitude." And with that, we'd like to welcome our special guest today, Steve Wilson. Steve Wilson is an author and poet based in San Marcos, Texas, where he's also a professor of creative writing at Texas State there in San Marcos. He's published hundreds of poems in journals and anthologies nationwide. He's the author of three poetry collections, Allegory Dance, The Singapore Express, and The Lost Seventh. And he's the editor of The Anatomy of Water, a sampling of contemporary American prose poetry. His latest book, Lose to Find, as I said, is out with Finishing Line Press, and we're honored to have him today as our guest. Steve Wilson, welcome to our show, Words on a Wire, my friend. How are you?
Oh, great.
Wonderful. Good. And you are calling us from your place there in San Marcos, Texas. Is that right?
Here at Texas State University.
At Texas State University, where you're a professor.
That's right.
Professor of creative writing. And I know that you've been there for quite some time, haven't you?
Since the 19th century, it seems like, but not quite that long, maybe.
The 19th century. That's great. Well, you know, I wanted to have you on the show to speak about your fantastic latest book, your latest collection of poetry titled Lose to Find, and it's out with Finishing Line Press. And it's a beautiful, beautiful cover, by the way, for our listeners who can't see the book or hold it. You know, the cover is just so a matted finish with this blue sort of, you know, I don't know if it's a painting, if that's what it looks like, a painting on the cover.
It is. One of my colleagues, Shaparno Banerjee, his wife is an artist.
Wow.
And I was lucky enough to convince her that I could use one of her paintings for the cover. It's this amazing oil painting of half overturned boat.
Oh.
And the blues are just remarkable. So right. What I told her is I hope the poems were good enough for her cover. It's just, you're right, it's an amazing cover.
It is. It really is. And, you know, because I take it that it's an up-close shot of a sort of
right.
section of the painting, because you can't tell it's an upturned boat. But, yeah, and, you know, I love the painting, the cover, I should say, because it really is fitting for this whole collection of work, which, if you don't mind here, I'm going to actually... I want to just kind of take a brief excerpt from these two blurbs you have on the back, because I think they really describe the book's contents perfectly. John Blair, author of Playful Song Called Beautiful, he writes, "You read these poems and you come out the other side chastened and charmed by a sense both of longing and of profound gratitude." And that's absolutely accurate. And then the other blurb is by David, I hope I pronounced his name right, Hadbonik.
That's right.
And he writes, "These are poems in search of light, light that transforms, sparks, and lifts, and in which selves are reflected, faces revealed as opened or closed." And I really feel like both of these blurbs encompass the kind of contemplative aspect, even meditational aspect of this whole body of work. But how would you yourself describe the book for our listeners?
Well, it's a really different collection for me. The title has a lot to do with that process. I found myself as a writer feeling like I had done what I could do with what I consider more precise kind of intellectual poetry, Wallace Stevens kind of poetry, and wanted to push myself in a different direction and really kind of shove myself off the cliff in a different direction. I think I was reading Diane DePrima at the time, one of the beat poets, and she talked about having a kind of intuition that if you let the poem come, you have to trust that kind of creative impulse.
Right.
And so I decided to try some new things, new spacing on the page, and a kind of daily practice of writing, forcing myself every day to write something new, so that I guess, you know, the poems for me are much more dealing with, as you said, a sort of meditative interaction with the world rather than really shaping the poetry toward an end. And that putting them all together, I hope the way that John and David talk about the poems, the impression is, I hope, that this is somebody trying to make sense of things and letting the things speak and reveal themselves.
Absolutely. And that's exactly the quality that I get from every poem from the first to the very end. But, you know, why don't we, because we're going to continue to talk about these wonderful poems, why don't we let our listeners have a sample? Maybe you can share, kick us off with one of the poems.
Sure.
Let me know what page it's on as well so I can follow.
Yeah, sure. I thought I would read first Green Ruins, which is on page 4.
That's the one I had actually dog-eared because I was going to request, so perfect.
Good. And for your listeners, each section is divided by several asterisks, so they're really, it's a collage in effect. And these are pieces of insights that came on different days, and I gathered them together into this one poem. So my pauses will be those breaks in the poem.
Mm-hmm.
So this is called Green Ruins. Up late investigating versions, you or you as you, find me wandering in the threadbare hours. So much of what is past, a confusion, back trail of tangled branches. Sight lines, I to they, no to be, drift to need. I see the world I cannot see, the shrouds, faint intimations. First fruits, new leaves on the path, these few words.
If you are just tuning in, that is the voice of poet Steve Wilson, who is reading from his latest collection of poetry titled Loose to Find, and that poem was called Green Ruins. Tell me a little bit more about the background for this poem here, Steve.
Well, like I said, for a year, I forced myself to write little poems every morning, and in fact, posted them for people to see, which frightened me to death to send something out that raw. But all of these, for me, have to do with a kind of investigation of self in this poem. And obviously, that was something that over the course of that year I was interested in. I think there are several poems that I've composed like that. And so this one seems to be about the intersection of image and language and identity in a lot of ways. The first section about investigating versions of oneself, and that kind of meditation through language is helpful for that process, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you mentioned earlier that there is this, after reading Dianda Prima, that there was this lean towards letting the poems come on their own, you know, this sort of following the impulse of what is there. And it made me think of, you know, a man who influenced some of the other beat writers, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who says that all things are a symbol of themselves. And you know, in your poetry, I find that there is that sort of less sort of, I think, inclination toward aggression or toward, like, you know, aggressively pursuing a subject, and rather more this sense of allowing the subject to arrive on its own, and for you as the poet, just to sort of corral or to capture that moment. And it reminds me a lot of even some of the work of the haiku masters, you know, Basho or Buson or, you know, other wonderful haiku masters. But just this idea of this kind of, you know, being aware enough to capture what's already there. Would you say that's kind of accurate?
And for me, so much meaning, I think, comes from the empty spaces in those perceptions where you can't quite express what you're sensing. You know, it's kind of ineffable in the world, but that it is, in fact, the inability to express it that gives you the insight. You get a sense, an intuition about meaning that these fragments, I hope, capture. So where they are on the page is important to me, too, because it's about silence as well as expression.
That's exactly what I get. Thank you for bringing that up. In fact, I wrote down in my notes here that it kind of reminded me, too, of some of the work of Robert Creeley.
I was going to mention him.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something we hadn't talked about this, but that's something that comes through, is just this attention to the silence, is this attention to space also, giving these, you know, separate images or, you know, bursts of inspiration their own room to contemplate around. So, yeah, go ahead and talk a little bit about that idea.
Well, I mean, I was drawn to Creeley even as an undergrad. I've read Creeley for a long time, and in some of his interviews, he talked about the fact that many of his short early poems, where he develops this kind of hesitant style that I think is a lot like Emily Dickinson in some ways, you know, fueled in some ways by the political oppression of the 1950s and early 60s, that you know, made it hard to speak, and so you had to be careful with your words for fear of others hearing them and appropriating them.
Right.
It's not that unusual to me, I suppose, and I don't tend to think of my work as political, but I think a certain environment surfaces in any given time, and we're living in a pretty difficult time in terms of language and expression and identity. So I would encourage anybody who's interested in poetry to read some early Creeley and see those echoes.
Yeah, and likewise, I would encourage them to read your book, Lose to Find,
because
of that same reason. But also, it has obviously its own sensibility and own concerns. And I think of the silences. I want to go back to this for a little bit, because I think that oftentimes, for those especially, maybe not those who are obviously, steeped in poetry, but you and I, but for folks who are maybe, new to poetry sometimes, I think that we tend to overlook, the white space on the page and tend to kind of almost look at the poem and think of how sparse this is, or, there needs to be more said. But there is a very real, tangible kind of contemplative aspect to allowing the silences around the words. And I think of on page 16, you have a poem titled Violently Sundered, which is a great example of that, where you really kind of, the words are very sparse, but each word is so, has so much, could be unpacked in so many ways because of, your attention to detail. But that's one of the things that really struck me about this collection and why I wanted to interview you and speak with you about it, because of the silences in the book.
And it's interesting you mentioned that poem, because I mentioned a few minutes ago that I don't find myself particularly political, but some of the poems did draw directly from current events, and that one, Violently Sundered, was about one of the terrorist attacks in France.
Right.
And dealing with, a kind of visceral reaction to the violence that is inherently political, but also has to do with, a feeling of humanity and emotion and connection to that suffering. So, one of the things poetry does very well is it provides a space for thinking about those things when the world is very loud and very violent.
Absolutely. I would tend to agree with that for sure. And, I think that when you approach poetry in the way that you're explaining here for us, is you can't help but then include or call attention to a lot of what is in nature, the ecological aspect of our experiences, and I think of some of James Wright's poetry came to mind as I was reading some of your work too. But where I would hesitate to call it eco-poetics, because I think it's even sort of, I think it's beyond a single genre, what you're working on here, or sort of sect of interest. But it really does have a lot of the sort of ecological within here. You're paying a lot of attention to space and to nature. Is that something that you, as you were allowing the poem to come to you, is that something you kind of had your eye on too? Are you, really sort of a hiker, or do you have any kind of, or is that just something that kind of happened organically in your own process?
Well, just before starting this interview, I was teaching Emerson, and next week we're going to talk about Thoreau. I'm teaching a whole class on American Romanticism, so I've been drawn to those writers and that kind of philosophical context for a very long time. And it has to, I think, influence or at least give you ways to think about your relationship to nature.
Yeah.
And what role language plays in that. I like Emerson's idea that the kind of morality one holds as an individual can be seen in how they use language to talk about the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you have a responsibility, I think, to try to be true to what you're perceiving, even if you don't know quite what it means.
Right.
So absolutely, those ideas about nature have inspired my work.
Yeah. I mean, that's, on a personal level for me as well. I know that oftentimes if I have any kind of loyalty to any one spiritual line of thought, or if I subscribe to any spirituality, it's nature. It really is. I look to nature often in my own work, and I find that really captivating, and obviously, in your own work as well. So, that's great. And one of the, actually, before I continue with my long list of questions, would you mind sharing another poem from your book?
Sure. I thought I might read Abstracts, which is on page 11.
Okay, go ahead.
Just a little bit of commentary before I read it. The poem felt odd to me when I wrote it, partly because it takes, it offers such an overt tone of voice that's unusual to me. It starts very conversationally, and in spite of the content, which has to do with, something being unbodied, the voice, I think, is overt in this poem, so that contradiction was interesting to me when I finished it.
Right.
So the poem is called Abstracts. Look, okay, whatever is beyond the body is precipitous, abysmal, a cliff over. Notions that diffuse and diffuse above the roiling Atlantic. That tree to tree, even the merest of warblers dart through. Look, it's not so much the unknown as the unmade. It's sprawl and everywhereness. There's hurt in here, at least. Ache. Ache's shape.
Wonderful. And if you are just tuning in with us here on Words on a Wire, we are speaking with the brilliant poet Steve Wilson about his new collection of poetry titled Lose to Find. That's out with Finishing Line Press. And we are on the phone with Steve. He's calling us from his home in San Marcos, Texas, where he's also a professor at Texas State there. I'm going to ask you actually a question, kind of take this in a little different direction, Steve. It's a question that I love talking with writers and asking writers about, because it always usually includes some fantastic, interesting story, at least. How did poetry find you? And how old were you, and where were you in your life when poetry first found you?
Well, I do have one of those origin stories. It's a little embarrassing to tell it.
See?
I came to poetry in an English class in junior high, honestly, because I hadn't read the book that we were assigned to read. And so I wrote a poem about it just to get through the assignment.
Right.
And my English teacher said, "You have a real way with language." And I thought, "Oh, okay." And started reading more poetry. And, you know, kind of stuck with it, but because I think there's that connection to how one expresses oneself. But I find that I can't write a short story or prose or anything. I know you can cross genres like that, but I really think I was made a poet, that's pretty much all I can do,
right,
which is not much of a profession in our culture, but so it goes.
It's a tough existence, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But a rewarding one, you know, but a rewarding one.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, yeah. And so you say that, you know, when your English teacher at the time made that comment about you had a way with words, you know, then I imagine then at some point you sort of were able to reflect on how that came about, that you had a way with word. Were you influenced by your folks or your family, or, you know, how did language then come to you early on? How do you feel like sort of language was, it had influenced you as a young man?
Both of my parents are big readers. We had books all over the house. And so I was surrounded by language from a very early age and read a lot as a kid in school and out.
Right.
So, but the other part of it, I think, is I've always kind of assumed that I have very little to say, which is an odd thing for a writer to express. But I really think that, you know, I'm drawn to poetry partly because for me it's about questioning as opposed to asserting. And I know other people have different attitudes, but it seemed to be a place in which I could investigate and think about images and think about words, and that has been with me my whole life. And so I think that's why I'm drawn to poetry, that it encourages one to ask instead
that's
of
right.
state.
That's right. I was actually just having this same conversation about this idea right here with my students here at UTEP last week, this idea that I think sometimes we're often thought if you write a book, it's because you have some answers, you know, about something. And,
right.
and in fact, at least for me and probably for a lot of writers, it's more about the discovery, you know, the questions we have more than the answers. And in fact, by the time we're done writing a book, sometimes we only have more questions, you know.
Yeah, I think there's nothing harder than gaining that trust, which I suppose is what Diane DePriem was talking about, to let the poem go where it wants to go. And if you've written poetry, you know what that means, that there's often a point at which the imagery moves in a different direction or the word choice pulls away from the literal thing that was in front of you, and you say, well, that actually seems to be a better choice than being true to the experience in, you know, in a factual way.
Right.
And it's a remarkable moment when that happens, when you see like the art seems to be taking over and you've got to let it go, I think.
That's right. In fact, I think that oftentimes the subject that we think we're embarking on or that we're after is really just the doorway, the invitation into what we're really after, you know?
Yeah. And writing every day, as I did with this project before the book, kind of took that, you know, took that away from me, that idea that I was sitting down to say something. I really was sitting down to see what happened to be on my mind at that moment. It's a totally different approach to the text. Is it, you know, you're seeing what comes out as opposed to trying to make something come out in a way you want to.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And, you know, are you originally from San Marcos? Is that where you were born and raised?
No. When I was young, we kind of moved around. My father was in sales, but they ended up south of Houston. So when I was about 11, we moved there. And then I moved out to go to college.
Nice. Nice.
So I guess I'm from Texas if I had to choose.
You have to, right? Yeah. Yeah, no, I understand that, being, I guess, from California myself. You know, one of the things too, because I follow you on Facebook as well, and I hope you don't mind me saying, but I saw a fantastic photograph that you put up there recently of Allen Ginsberg, and it was a photograph that I'm assuming, or it looked like you took that photo. Is that right?
Yeah, it's very odd that it popped up. he came to the campus to read the year before he died, and I was in charge of the writing series back then, so I had this incredible honor and intimidating task of greeting him and taking him around and making him feel welcome. One of the great moments of my life as an adult. But yeah, he arrived in Austin, and I picked him up, and he had a book signing at one of the big bookstores in Austin.
Yeah.
And while we're walking over, he said, could you take my picture? He handed me his camera, and I snapped it and gave it back and never thought about it again until it popped up.
Wow.
And I thought, I took that picture.
You took that picture. And that's a great photo, by the way. I mean, it is a great photograph, yeah.
Well, you know, he was good at being photographed. I think he had a sense of his pose as a kind of, you know, performance. And so I think a lot of his just snapshots from people are good because he knew how to present himself.
Yeah, definitely he did. And, you know, one of the things there, you being a professor there at San Marcos, at Texas State there, you know, I know that you and I have had several interactions over the last few years, you know, about, you know, just working with your students and all of that. And I'm wondering, how do you feel like your teaching there or your teaching writing has influenced your own writing, your own process?
It would depend on when you ask me, because there are some times when I feel that teaching workshop is problematic for being a writer, because you're kind of putting the energy of revision and focus into somebody else's work, which is, of course, what you're supposed to do as a teacher.
Right.
But then that energy is pulled away from your own creative process.
Yeah.
Other times when I feel that, you know, my way of writing poetry differs fundamentally from theirs, as I have felt lately.
Yeah.
I think things are different from people in their 20s now.
Yeah.
I don't feel that as much because we're talking about different things and what I'm dealing with.
Sure.
So, you know, it certainly keeps me abreast of what people are interested in right now and what young poets are trying to do and how they see themselves.
Right.
Which is not the way I tend to see myself or saw myself as a 20-year-old poet.
Right. Yeah. I'm starting to feel some of that myself as well.
Yeah. It'll only get worse.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that, you know. But, you know, we only have a couple of minutes left, Steve. And so I would really like to close us on your voice. So if you wouldn't mind sharing one more poem with us before we say goodbye.
Okay. Well, how about the last one in the book then?
Yep. Sounds good.
Okay. It's called In My Dreams, I Am Whole. In my dreams, I am whole and ready. Heading out, eagerness in the air itself. Even at stop signs, all motion and movement. In my dreams, a dark green that is like river, water. It goes, flows now out toward the hollows, and I go too. I follow. I agree. I do. In my dreams, you and I, out early in a gray boat, the lake blossoms broad and silvering, light easing over the tree line. And the shore, there are miles yet to the shore.
Thank you so much. If you are just tuning in now here to Words on a Wire, that was the voice of poet Steve Wilson, who's also a professor at Texas State in San Marcos. And that's from his collection of poetry titled Lose to Find. That's out with Finishing Line Press. Steve, before we let you go here, what can we look forward to from you on the horizon?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I got my next collection accepted. It'll be out later in the year.
Wonderful.
Which is great. There's some older things in there and quite a bit of new stuff. So I'm really excited about it. It's odd to shift that quickly from one collection to the next, but I'll take it. It doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, exactly. And we got to seize it when it does, right?
Yeah. And let me add before we hang up, I should share my congratulations with you on being made a fellow at the Texas Institute of Letters.
Thank you so much, of which you yourself have already been inducted into, and you're a part of as well. You've been part of that for quite some time. So thank you.
It's a great
really
group.
An honor.
It's fun to be a part of, and they do a lot of good work. So it's not just an honor. You make a difference in supporting new writers and new books.
And I was really happy to be inducted this year with my colleague, Rosa Alcala, who's here at the writing program as
That's
well.
That's
right. UTIP. So, yeah, and we've had a couple of colleagues, I think, in the past. So Daniel Chacon and Sasha Pimentel, wonderful folks. And we're looking forward to being out there in April to participate. And hopefully I'll get to see you there.
I hope so.
Well, Steve, thank you so much. It's been really a pleasure, my friend. And I look forward to, in fact, we've got to have you on when your next book comes out. So let me know.
Well, thanks for talking with me. It was great.
All right. Have a good morning. Take care.
Bye.
And that wraps it up for today's edition of Words on a Wire. We would like to thank our special guest, Mr. Steve Wilson, poet and professor at Texas State in San Marcos. And we'd like to thank our wonderful magician back there, magician slash producer who makes it all happen, Stefania. Thank you. And thank you, listeners. And that wraps it up for this week. See you next week, same time, same place on KTEP 88.5 FM.